this show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome to Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 397. Did you guys do one without me? It's the Hands Across the Watery podcast, as long as it's Great Lakes water you're talking about.
You're going to enjoy listening to that one.
I'm Steve Raker from the Comic Book Bunker, along with Andrew the L.A. Rabbit, who's stateside, and our contingent to the north, Kevin Whirlwind X, and Phil.
In real Canada. Kevin's the crowd.
What?
Real Canada.
Well, it's not like we're on different sides of the country or something.
You can find Indie Comic Book Noise on Facebook, on Twitter, at Indie Comic Book N. And you can listen to us on our sister show, Marvel Noise. And cussing is allowed, so feel free to wager. Phil.
See, Kevin, that's how you do it, Kevin.
I've been on my
Steve
back
got her, Steve got her intro out in like 30 seconds. I think it took the two of us 5 minutes.
Five minutes to record, 20 minutes to edit.
Well, I was trying to... Why did we get distracted? I don't know. I need to re-listen. Somehow we got distracted easily.
Now, I missed all of the Comic-Con talk from your last con trip, Andrew. And I... try to be there for those. So I hope you at least saved one tidbit for me, one story, one thing to put me there.
Well, I had to save this one book for you and Phil.
See?
And it's a
bad one for me.
No, it's a Golden Frog Press. Are you guys familiar with that?
No.
It's a Northern California company, and it's Tales from the Dank Side, number one. And it's basically like the we bonded a little bit over the Freak Brothers and Gilbert Shelton, and he thought that the market needed to continue that sort of humor in modern comic books. And he said normally he only does other sort of conventions, but since California passed their recent proposition, he felt he could present his comic books at a comic book show. So I looked through all the titles and decided Tales from the Dank Side was the one I was going to pick. And it's Vince Duggar is the head guy for all this. And this one is basically one of those Tales from the Creep. So there's a bunch of little stories. The first one is The Creature from the Black Bong Goo. So, you know, it's the typical crew of young kids going to party at the lake house, getting high. And then they all go skinny dipping, and the girl frees a iguana. And next door, they're making some super experimental growth chemical, but it mutates animals, so they have to kill the animal. They think they're spies. The kids are spies. So they dump all the chemicals into the water, and that mutates them and creates the creature. And then, you know, you can see how that would go. And that's, the art's kind of fun. It's all different stories. And then Diary of a Dab Pyre is a Vampirella style story. Except in this case, they drink the blood of, the people who've had, THC enriched blood. So they have to, you know, get them high, and then they drink their blood. And she hangs out with the Grim Reaper and the Ripped Creeper.
Oh, now I get why it reminded you of us.
And then the last one is The Killer Kush, where it's a scientist who doesn't like all these hippies that he sells the marijuana to, but his chemical makes it grow really fast. And, you know, the hippies are always like, relax, man. And then he goes back, and there's an accident in the lab, and he ends up merging with the pot plants, and then the hippies come over and they end up smoking him.
Oh no.
And
what a way to go.
Yeah. And then Bongarella has one little final one at the end, A Curse of the Weed Wolf. Again, another one of those where you know, if you smoke this particular strand of marijuana during the moonlight, you turn into a werewolf. So, yeah, just, you know, good wholesome fun for the whole family.
Does the art, lots of, is the art style like a similar to like a, that underground comics-y ripoff comics look? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like the Gilbert Shelton-y, R. Crummy type of?
Yes, more, yes, I would say it's like an homage to that.
Yeah.
And also a little bit to the old, like, Crypt Keeper type, you know, a lot of detailed panel. And, like I said, the stories have different artists to them. It's a fun, like I said, all in all, I was kind of surprised. I was expecting a bit more of kind of a lower production value, so to speak. So I was pleasantly surprised. I'm like, this is actually like a, you know, you have to be willing to stomach an awful lot of marijuana-related puns. But if you're happy with that and a little bit of cheesecake, it's a fun story. So I only got the first issue because, you know, with these things, I just buy one. But I thought you guys would get the kick out of.
And it kind of has a horror theme, too.
Which yeah, which I thought, Phil, you would relate right into. And then they had these, so you had a bunch of other comics. Tales of the World Famous Drive-Thru Bud is on its fourth issue. There was a second issue of this one. But you can check them out at drivethroughbud.com or goldenfrogpress.com.
Cool.
And it's this whole little comic book company. If you like a gag, but the cover is great. It's got bong-curdling horror to give you a blood-chilling high. And it's got the skeleton guy kind of somewhat off-panel with a big bong going, "Come closer, my pretty, don't be afraid. Have a choke, I mean a toke, of this OG hemlock." And it's got some...
Do the pages look like papers?
It's like EC Comics meets Ripoff Press. That's
yeah.
Cool.
Got some, you know, young 70s-looking girl without a bra and a little tank top on the cover looking horrified. Yeah, that's a fun if you don't mind silly stoner humor.
I recently picked up a, I guess it's a larger than digest sized, but not as large as a comic book, trade paperback collection of artist, writer, creator, illustrator Tim Malloy's silent comics from 2007 to 2012. It's called It Shines and Shakes and Laughs, and it is published by his imprint Milk Shadow Books. And who Tim Malloy is, why he had interested me to pick up this book, is he is the fella from New Zealand, I believe, who created Mr. Unpronounceable that I covered on an episode many moons ago. And Mr. Unpronounceable has a new volume as well, Mr. Unpronounceable and the Infinity of Nightmares, that I just started getting into, and it is just as twisted as I hoped, and I'm gonna have to really soak that one in and let it saturate into all the canyons of my mind here. So I focused on the other book first. It shines and shakes and laughs. All right, and it is, as we said, the silent comics. Some of them are one pagers. There's a bunch of 4 and 5 pagers. There's even a 24 pager, and it's got a bunch of the imagery that is proliferates the Mr. Unpronounceable strips as well, like the creepy golem dude, and there's this other little guy, Impy, who's this like smiley-faced striped creature, and he appears in several of the strips. What's really cool is, I mean, first of all, I should mention again that the way that, this plots aren't important at all. It's the journey, not the destination, for sure. His art is really psychedelic, and everything is like a crazy fever dream, and for the most part. Amongst all of these little strips, though, throughout this book, are these parody ads that have like the copy, the text is like alien glyph type characters, and so there's like a toothbrush ad where the first panel shows an old man's face with like manga lines all shooting out from behind him. And then in the next three panels, his face slowly opens up and like almost like a predator face kind of comes out. And then it's more like a Lovecraftian Cthulhu tentacle demon with a vaginal maw in the middle
of
it.
Go on.
And then at the bottom, it's a toothbrush. And so it's like some sort of ad for a toothbrush that is completely undecipherable. But it's hilarious. And even along the side, it's got like little alien tiny text that would be like, you know, copyright, you know, whatever the company is, Aquafresh toothpaste or whatever. That. There's a whole bunch of those throughout this. And I just really dig Malloy stuff. It's whacked out and it is divinely inspired in many ways. And it really is like taking a trip like no other. It's nothing to rush through because you want to spend some time in that space. It's like a free acid trip. It's great.
Check out. Is it color? Color or black and white?
Black and white. Color would be much too distracting. There are gray tones throughout, but color would be too much. The covers are color, and I mean, they're intense. Which I will share on the Facebook page and Twitter.
Well, first off, I just want to say I read Vampirella, the 25-cent one there.
Right, Phil, what did you think?
I thought for me it was refreshing and it kind of got me back into her. I love the art style and just the look of it. And if it keeps up with that, then I'm definitely in 100%. And also Invincible, I think it's 133 maybe, came out last week and it was 25 cents also. And it's the last, it's part one of the last 12 issues of Invincible because it's ending. So I would highly recommend that too, even if you only read the start or something.
I read up to issue 100 and I haven't read anything since, but I have them all. So now that it's
so you're
like,
close to it, yeah.
Now that's going to wrap up, I think that's going to be an awesome chunk. I'll have like, what, like 36
yeah.
issues
Very
to
awesome
read.
Chunk.
That'd be great.
I'm jealous.
Bendis can't take over the book. That would have been awesome.
But I'm sad that it's ending because like, I really look forward to that book when it comes out. But what I'm covering today is something I absorbed three versions of it. So I've seen the TV show, two movies, and the book, which is Attack on Titan.
Oh, jeez.
So what? I kind of wanted to compare them all. But I started, the first thing I absorbed was the first two movies. And then I went comic and then TV show. As far as everything, I enjoyed the. I know everyone won't agree with me, but I enjoyed the two movies more and everything else. Just because the look of the Titans, like just how creepy they were, their smiles and the action in it and stuff, where the comic book, it's almost like they kind of skip a lot of the action. Like it might just be one panel and they don't look very good, the Titans and everything. But otherwise, they're pretty much the same kind of, but for me, the big disappointment was the twist in it, which I'm just going to ruin it because I don't care, is how the main character ends up turning into a Titan. I don't know if you like that, Kevin, but I thought that kind of ruined, like I was really into it. I thought that kind of ruined it for me, though, once that happened.
That was kind of an early twist. I don't know. That was fine.
Well, I was just more, like I more wanted to see the group of kids maybe lost beyond the wall or something like that, trying to survive on their own in this world.
Well, there's a lot of...
Because it became like a superhero type comic almost, you know, but then...
Well, there's a lot of different spin-offs, like you can kind of...
Yeah, the next storyline's a girl skinless creature. This time it was a guy.
Or if you wanted to, like, I don't know why, sometimes you wonder, I guess people are interested, like, if you wanted to see, before there was, before when they were in school and there was no Titans around and how they acted in school, like there's some school...
They go into that too. A bit? Yeah, see, I don't think I'd like that too much. Because me, it's more seeing the world. Like, I thought the movie did a good job with the sets and everything. The acting and the dramatic lines were kind of sucked.
But what I've seen most of is as anime. That's what I've seen most of.
That's
so.
I enjoyed that the least, probably, because I watched that last. So I think by then, I seen that story three times, you know, so.
Yeah.
So it probably kind of ruined it for me a bit.
Were the movies animated?
No, they were live action, and that's what was cool about them. Just because the Titans look so awesome. Like, I just love seeing them on the screen. Just their smiles are so creepy. But yeah, overall, though, I thought it was pretty good, and I see why everyone loves it so much. I don't think I'm going to read any more of it or watch any more of it, unless like another live-action movie comes out or something. But otherwise, I got the point, and I enjoyed what I saw.
I can't wait till the next season of anime comes out, because I'm going to probably be getting daily comments from a specific person about it.
Now I could join in.
Kevin, would you step up to the front of the class, please?
Would I? Oh, I don't know if this is front of the class appropriate. I got something called Peter's Muscle.
Uh-oh.
What does that sound?
Oh, something non-appropriate definitely popped in my mind. When you say Peter Muscle.
There's this guy called Peter, and he wears this, there's a spider on his chest, and he has, a lot of lines, and he kind of looks like a guy that's wearing a Spider-Man costume, you know? Like, if there was a Spider-Man, you know?
Is that like a Power Man?
Yeah. This is self-published by Michael DeForge. Probably good luck finding this one, because I don't think some of this stuff is that readily available. I've noticed some of the... When some of this stuff very rarely goes up on eBay, sometimes someone has a whole bundle, or it's just one issue and it's $75 or something.
Yeah, he's darling of the art crowd. He's your art comics buddy.
I don't know if I would call this art comics, though. I feel like this isn't far enough. Like, when you start putting Green Lantern and everything into your own comics, it just feels like it there's not enough, or I don't feel like the hate, superhero hate. Like, I gotta feel the hate emanating off your comics. And if I'm not feeling that, then I'm like, I don't think you went far enough in your indie ways for the art comics crowd.
Why do you want people to hate superheroes?
I don't. But there's the secret wars between them, so. You know. This feels like a photocopy, kind of. I don't know, something about the color and everything. Like, it's sort of like a yellow-orange cover. It just reminds me of one of the colors, of the paper. Or, you know those, post-it notes? They come in the certain colors. Like, you can get the white, the really bright pink. And then you get, that sort of, yellow-orange. I'm like, this seems like one of those colors. I don't know. But Peter's Muscle on the cover is... It kind of reminds me of Batman at the bottom. And it has, the...
It's Spider-Man. It's Batman.
It's falling off of the title of the story. But anyways, this is a story about Peter.
Where'd you get it?
Is he a pumpkin eater?
No, I got it in Toronto. I got it at the Big Island.
Oh, okay.
Because other than going to TCAF, where else was I going to find this? I don't think it's on Comixology. I'd be very surprised if this was on Comixology.
I would have figured they would have, all the indie-type stuff.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Man, don't they carry art comics on Comixology?
Mm-hmm. Maybe, yeah, I think Koyama Press is now on there, and before they were only on the Indie Comics app that is separate from Comixology. I don't know, you never hear about people using that app, but I assume people that are into the ones and zeros of, Indie Comics are using that app for a lot of their purchases.
Well, he's listed as a creator on Comixology.
Yeah, I think he has some work on there.
Yeah, so it's not unreasonable.
Well, I wonder if some of these things aren't getting reprinted, and I kind of wonder if it's because Marvel might sue him. Or maybe that's just the joke. Like, I guess it's parody, right? Sort of?
Yeah.
Well, also, he might have reached the natural customer base of his limit on the first printings.
Well, this was, like, years ago, too. So I'm thinking he probably wasn't as well-known. Like, I'm sure he's much more well-known in the years since. So I can't see there being that many copies of this out there anyways to begin with. Like, I'd be surprised if there was more than 1,000 copies of this. So it's basically Peter has a... He's talking to someone. He's on one of those couches. And he's relaying an experience that happened to him. He had a weird dream where he was walking. And then he picks up the sidewalk. And he's like, yeah, it's like I opened up the sidewalk. And then there was like a membrane. And then I pulled back, you know, like the tissue there. And there was a face. But he can't investigate this further because coming to see him on the sidewalk here is Aunt May and Doc Ock. So they break it to Peter that they've been seeing each other and they're moving to the country. So there's not a whole lot of crime out in the country. So he doesn't have his grand adventures. But he's wearing the costume all the time. You never see him as him. It's kind of strange.
Like the Tick.
And then one night, he has trouble sleeping. He hears some weird noise coming from Aunt May's room. And he walks in on Dr. Octopus and Aunt May.
Oh, jeez.
And they're all sweaty.
Shouldn't you be covering this on Marvel Noise?
I don't know if this is appropriate for Marvel Noise. This is an indie release.
I've seen a sweaty Doc Ock before, and it ain't pretty.
Steve Ditko, wrapping that right back around.
Oh, it is, yeah, I would say it's around that sweaty. Oh, so strange. So some other stuff ensues that is kind of traumatic. And you find out he's relaying this story to Doctor Strange.
All right, can we move on?
No, there's actually another story in here, too. This guy has, I guess you could say it's maybe similarities to... just because, you know, if someone's wearing some kind of leopard skin, it might make you think of certain characters. But I don't think it's supposed to be any specific character like the earlier story. But I think it's more of the, like, what's his name? I think it was like the Jesse Jacobs story I was reading before about the weird animals they were encountering on an expedition, and then some of them, like, start grabbing onto you, or then you were starting to kill some of them. Like, this is one of those stories where he's after some kind of creature, and then, you know, eventually you kill him, and then you're cutting him open, and, like, guts are, and innards are going all over. It's like one of those stories. Kind of stories, which apparently originally appeared on Viceland.com. Interesting stuff. I would definitely recommend if someone was able to find this somewhere. And on the back cover, it has all these things crossed out, and Ultimate's crossed out, Amazing is crossed out, Spectacular is crossed out, and Sensational is crossed out. Strange.
Andrew, you're my go-to guy for a palate cleanser. Don't fail me.
A few weeks ago, I got a chance to go back to Comics Factory, which is in a little town a little further away, so I don't get there as much. And, you know, when I'm in the store, I always ask, what would Phil do? So I grab a stack of Action Lab Danger Zone books that I was unfamiliar with. That line has really expanded quite a bit. I didn't realize I had so many titles. Phil, are you still reading any of them?
Apparently not. I hear that Vamp... Is it Vamp Blade? That's been going on for quite a while now.
I picked up two issues of Vamp Blade. 10 and 11. There we go! Issue 10 had a Batman parody cover. Vamp was crossed out and Bat was put in. And then you open up and you see that there are, like, cheesecake cover variants they do and everything. Then I realize it's just kind of a... It is one of those cheesecake-style books, but they try and insert a bunch of humor. So the character that was turned into Vampy Blade worked in a comic book shop, and it's in the middle. What I like about this is they have a little blurb about... Katie, the Vamp Blade, and it's gives the credits there. Jason Martin, created and written by, artwork by Winston Young. And then to contrast it, I also bought an issue of Tomboy.
I didn't read Tomboy. Sorry, I was on mute there. But what I was going to say is Vamp Blade is one of my favorites. But you read the stuff I don't really like, which is the last storyline before season two, because it's her going through trying to pick a new costume, and she does like a Deadpool one issue, Batman type ones, like that kind of thing.
Yeah,
but
and then the
stuff
next
before
one,
it is really fucking
okay.
Cool.
Yeah, so these were, I got it because I'm like, oh, it's Batman. I mean, when I opened it up and saw the cheesecake alternate covers, I was also a little, oh.
Oh well, yeah, these have those, all the nudity ones where you see the titties, but... 1-9 is good. 1-9 is I really enjoyed the dialogue, the story, like all of it. But it's probably my second favorite comic by them, because my first favorite is the Voracious one, the Dinosaur Cook one.
Right.
And, but yeah, I'm still collecting a lot of their stuff whenever I see it.
And I just contrast that with Tomboy. I just like the cover. It's Tomboy number 9, and it's like a goth looking girl with black eyes. And, like, it looks like hair coming out and flowers all over. But what I thought was interesting is there is no blurb on the inside. Like, Tomboy just drops you in. Like, you picked up issue 9, you figure it out, which I kind of like. The other thing that's weird is the credits. They're on the cover, Goodwin and Wong. Mm-hmm. And it's copyright Mia Goodwin, and I have the Mia Goodwin cover. But no, they don't put, like, a credits page in it.
Oh, really? Huh.
Which was just kind of weird. And this was actually not a bad
usually
one to jump in.
Usually it's on the inside cover always for them.
Yeah, and this, like I said, this one has no blurb, none of that stuff. Just shows the two covers and all the indicia. It wasn't a bad one to jump in. You see the main character, Tomboy. Apparently it's a world with magic, and Tomboy has created this sort of undead servant. And that's the girl on the cover, I believe. And then there's also these dead people that... I think they're the same people, and they can talk to their dead versions. And this one's good because the Tomboy character goes to a doctor who explains, like, the history of these people and how there's two tribes and the afflicted and how the blood of one runs through the family of the other and all this stuff. It was just fun, like. It'd been a long time since I just grabbed a book where they give you nothing. And they're like, have fun. And I forgot how kind of interesting it is to just jump in and read the 9th issue of something with no... Because I can't think of any other book that doesn't give you... Like I said, Vampy Blade has a little... Like, just a even if it's a log line, like, there is nothing. And I'm like, that's fun.
Well, I've been doing that lately, because you mentioned that once before, I remember, and so it got me thinking, and I started picking up things just randomly, like we used to when we were younger, and I'm fine, yeah. Like, I'm still getting into things.
Well, it also frees your head of any kind of expectations. Like, even a little paragraph or something might set you thinking a certain way. And when you just read the story, you're like, who's this character? What's going on here?
And you fill in the blanks a bit yourself.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm sure some of it's the nostalgia of when we were younger, that chasing down leads and filling in the holes yourself and everything. But yeah, those were two. I just didn't realize how many Danger Zone books there were. I thought there was just...
Oh, yeah, there's tons.
Like kind of the movie tie-ins. I thought that was pretty much it, but no, there's this whole other world of them.
Oh, no, there's always been a lot, though. If you go, like, into a store where they sell them all, or their website, you'll see there's tons of books you can get. I never tried Tomboy, though, but if you liked it, I'm going to try that now.
It's got a bit of that Eastern influence, Phil, I will warn
you. If I don't like it, I'm blaming you.
Yeah, maybe I should send you this issue. I have one comics I need to send you anyways. Well, they had a big... They and, like, Aspen, mm-hmm. I think, were the two big publishers at the Long Beach Expo. And Dwanch was there pushing the stuff. And it's always good to see those guys. And, yeah, you're right. It was just a big table. My local store, since it's gone through its thing, doesn't... They get a few of these titles, but they don't get the full slate. So it is fun to go see all the fun stuff they got.
I've been searching through some of my Comixology scores. I love just scouring the indie releases and looking for odd covers and things that are, you know, 17 and older rated and things like that, and just grabbing different little issue ones here or there and seeing if anything, I mean, a lot of these don't have an issue two or hopefully will someday or that kind of thing, or maybe they do, but just on the creator's website and not yet on Comixology. But I found something from a group called Pizza Party Comics, and it's called Punch to Kill. And it's 2015, and again, this was digital through Comixology. And this is written by Kevin Clark and Will Long. And they had written Punch to Kill as a movie that was unrealized. And then years later, when Tarantino was doing the Grindhouse movies and had a contest for movie trailers in that vibe, they made a Punch to Kill movie trailer and threw a lot into that high production, and that seemed to be as far as the movie was going to get. And then they got together with a fellow, an artist named Mark Palm, who wanted to do some sort of comic with Kevin Clark, one of the writers. They were hanging out, talking about comics and their love for comics, as the story goes on the editorial page at the end of the book. And they decided, well, let's revive this Punch to Kill thing. And they had gone through so many revisions of what the movie would be. They had so many scenes and ideas that they had material enough that could be many comic book adventures. And it's like a Shaolin cowboy prison pit kind of vibe, black and white, except the cover is color, and that's what caught me, and how could it not? The cover is a giant mound of bodies, corpses. Some of them have, like, pitchforks sticking out and other weapons that were once held by them when they were alive. And through the middle of this giant mound of corpses is a fist coming through. Pow! And, like, entrails and body parts from all these corpses are flying out. And then atop of that mound with the fist punching through it is the protagonist of the story, standing at the top like it's a little bride and groom at the top of a wedding cake. He's standing at the top, punching the head clear off of a dude who's attacking him with a chainsaw, and the uppercut he's giving him is like a Rock'em Sock'em robot, the way that the head is being knocked off his head. It's like flicking a dandelion top off with your thumb, the way that the hit is going. So it's like Punch to Kill with that kind of imagery. Had to check it out. It's 23 pages of story, including a text page at the end and, you know, a title page and a pinup or two, that kind of thing. And you start just with, like, a dude waking up tied to a chair, handcuffed, and he's got to fight his way out of his predicament and fight his way out of the building that he's in, and much major violence, you know, and gore ensues. There's cursing, there's heads being smashed together and eyeballs flying out and gore like you wouldn't believe. At the end, he faces like this jacked up junkie mutant dude, and at one point he uses like an iron fist like power, the steel dragon fist, and the use of it calls to attention all of these other, like, mystics and kung fu type people from around the globe, and one of them is Iron Fist. It's pretty funny. Just like all these floating heads look like, oh my gosh, it's the steel dragon fist being used. Totally kooky.
Sounds violent.
Yes.
Very violent. This is gonna be the corpse body parts flying off episode.
Yeah. Kevin wanted violence and anger, and there you go.
So all of your guys talked the episode or two ago about Aliens and Predators kind of got me on one of my dumb binges. So I watched all the movies.
Dumb bitches? What?
Binges.
Oh.
I probably was on a few dumb bitches too, but that's another story. And so I watched all the movies, even those dumb Alien and Predator movies.
Wow.
I got all the video games, or at least a couple of them. And I read the ones you guys read, which I didn't really enjoy. It wasn't as good as the first four trades from the Predator and Prometheus one I read so far.
Okay.
But the one I really did enjoy, though, was Brian Wood's Aliens Defiance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with that one. It's one that's still going.
Yeah.
And this is probably in my top five alien stories, I'd say. And basically what it is there's a group of those army space dudes, and they're going to a ship, you know, average alien story, blah, 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 aliens on there, killed the whole crew. And the alien ends up killing all of them except for one girl and the robot guys. And so one of the robot guys, he was one of the newer, like the first type models and stuff, and he ended up doing upgrades on himself and stuff. And he goes to the girl and is like, we got to just stay in space and go after all these different alien sightings or whatever before the Wayland group gets them, because they want to use them as a weapon.
Sure.
And so it's just them going on different adventures each issue. Getting to the aliens first and destroying everything before anybody else gets there. And it's really fun. I like how it's almost like one and done's in a way, but it's all connected still. It's like I say, probably one of my top five alien stories. The art is good. It's Brian Wood. Some stuff I like his, some I don't, but he is a good writer though.
I have more body parts.
If you're going to tell me about your third leg, I'm going to come right through this microphone and smack you.
He already talked about Peter's muscle.
And how he could rip up a sidewalk with it.
How about a guy with the body of a dog? This is a twofer. Because after the Peter's muscle, I had to read Incinerator.
I've seen those Disney movies.
But this guy is basically talking about... explain to people, like, he has a weird body thing, because it's like a dog. It's like a dog body, but he has like a head.
A human head? Has, yeah.
But his Snoopy-like arms aren't really that usable.
So he's like a Tyrannosaurus Rex?
Yeah, kind of. He's kind of... That would probably be the best example, because he's just kind of weirdly shaped, and then he gets mugged. No one comes to help him.
Yeah, because he's a dog man. I'm going to go help the dog man.
Well, that's what they say. Like, he wakes up in the hospital, and it's one of those things where, like, he's already, like, different to begin with. And then they say, well, because of hospital insurance policy and all this stuff, we weren't allowed to treat animals in this building, so we removed all the animal parts from you.
If there's a dog with a human head, that's the type of dog you put to sleep.
But unfortunately, all the animal parts died on the way to the animal hospital, so now he only has, like, legs and a head. Is this doing anything for you, Steve?
The circle's closing in.
Does he have a dog penis or a human penis?
That's a good question. I don't think I should get into that. He has weird relations. Not those types of relations. Just that because he used to be like part dog, like part of his body was a dog. So when he talks to dogs, like he might have had some kind of connection there. Anyhow. It was funny because he also is sitting on a couch talking to someone at some point. So I kind of wonder, oh, is this like... But it's not. It's just an old man that he's talking to. But good news, he ends up getting arms later on. Like these weird, sort of like plasticky, really long, stretchy arms. So everything seems to be working out for him pretty well. And then you find the reason it's called Incinerator is because you get to find out what happened to the rest of his body. Like they have a panel and everything, and then you get into some weird relationshipy stuff, and it's done in the regular, crazy indie Michael DeForest style. So it's always fascinating, always weird. And there's a support group in here where they tell him, oh, because, you know, you lost a bunch of body parts, you need to go to the support group. But then he goes there to introduce himself to everyone, and he finds out that everyone at the support group is his family. And I was just like, what are the odds? And they're all just like, hi. And then he's like, these are all members of my actual family. And then the guy that recommended this support group is like, really? I don't know why that really got me, but just weird, wacko humor. Color cover, too. This one's actually like full color and everything. And I think this came from Secret Headquarters.
Whoa.
Which I believe.
The one here in L.A.?
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Which I believe is a comic shop. I don't know how often you've been there.
Been there a few times. It's a really nice looking shop. They specialize in your type of comics, though. So they have a lot of, like, if Lisa Hanawalt's doing a signing, it's going to be at Secret Headquarters type of thing. So they don't want my kind in the store. Well, if we're talking Brian Wood, I don't know if you guys did that. I always try these things out. I went for John Carter at the End from Dynamite. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah.
Just made me laugh that it's called John Carter at the End. Because, you know, it's John Carter. That thing's never going to end.
So he's not like 80 years old or something?
Yeah, I thought that's what it was.
Yeah, but the whole point is that Dynamite's not going to let that franchise end as long as it's still around. So it's Brian Wood and Alex Cox, Hayden Sherman, Chris O'Halloran, and Thomas Napolitano. And I think I have the main cover. Like all Dynamite books, they have a million covers. And actually, that's kind of fun. I remember looking through the stack. It was at the store. And they show them on the inside back cover, too, so you can match up. And I do, in fact, have the main cover. And this one's rare. There's only, like, 15 covers. So yeah. They must not have thought it was going to do very well. But as you say, John Carter has retired. And he's off on Titan, hanging out with
Titan!
With his lady friend.
All back.
And he has an unexpected visitor telling him that Mars, i.e. Bars Zoom, as they call it, is dying. And the problem is, it's his son.
Yep.
But the mother of the son didn't realize that he was still alive because he told her that the son had died. And that's, you know, going to not go over well. Like, I don't have kids myself, but I would imagine if I told the mother of one of them that they died and they didn't die, that would really come back and haunt me. So when they go back to Mars, Mars is a war zone. And the second they land, Deja takes off to, you know, find the son. I don't know if John is 80, but he's definitely got white hair and is like an older dude. But are you guys, Steve, did you pick this up or you're waiting to hear about it? Or
no, I picked it up. I checked it out. It, you know, was mildly interesting.
I enjoyed the artwork. I don't know. I feel like coming in at this point in the story seems a little tough for me, I guess. I don't really know. I don't have any connection to the sun. So the fact that the sun is still alive isn't some big twist or isn't something I've been waiting for.
Yep. We'll see. We'll see what it does. Wood's not a bad writer, and if he has any love for the character, maybe he can craft a tale. But otherwise, it just seems like a bit of a stunty type of a thing, the end tale.
Well, I enjoyed I enjoyed the artwork, which you can't always say about that publisher.
True that. In continuing my exploration of some of those indie books on Comixology, came across another publisher, and this one is Killer Toons Comics, which also has their own website. and they also publish, you know, primarily under their Spanish comic magazine, the Ediciones Canales. And the writer is Manuel Amaro, and the artist is Miguel Angel Caceres, or Caceres, I should say. If I'm thinking of, if I'm pronouncing it the same as the large asteroid-type object floating, what is it, in the asteroid field, or in between the asteroid field and Mars, I think. Anyway, they there's two one-shots they have, both full color, nicely colored, and the art is real nice, too. And I really like the color palettes of each of the two books. The first one is Anger, so it should be right up Kevin's alley. And this was from last summer. And it's a 15-page story, fluffed out with some pinups and frontispieces and title pages, that kind of stuff. There's a woman who's in psychotherapy when it starts, and she's describing how her anger has, like, infiltrated her dreams. And she goes on to describe this dream where her anger just escalates to the point of spawning destructive powers, which then become like a vehicle for her rage. And she trashes everybody and everything around her. There's melting faces, giant explosions, and then there's an O. Henry twist at the end, which is quite appropriate and a good one. The other is The Individual Darwin. And this is a 12-page one-shot where a guy wakes up in a pile of corpses. And he's referencing that he got thrown in there with all of them and that they're all bit and infected. And it seems it is a zombie apocalypse. And these are all people who have been bit and they've been all dumped here in this giant pit so that when they turn into zombies, they're stuck down there. And they haven't turned yet, and he was mistakenly thrown in there with them. So he starts climbing out from the bodies and starts taking them and piling them up to, while they're still dead, to create enough height to possibly get out of this pit. And along the way, he uncovers a girl who's alive in a similar situation, and she hasn't been bit either. And she's like, you know, well, how long do we have before these things start turning? And he's like, well, I don't know, like 8 to 12 hours, but I don't know when that time started because we were both unconscious, you know? And all of a sudden, one of them starts waking up and pulls her shirt off, and you get to see her boobies. And and the guy stabs the zombie, and as they're continuing to pile up some bodies because they're almost close enough to the top that he can just give her a boost to get out, and then she can help pull him up. He gives her his coat to cover her up, and notices under his coat that he's got a bandage on, and he's been bit. And so, instead of helping raise her up, you know, the O. Henry ending here is he ends up leading the zombies to rip her apart, and he tears her throat out, and then uses that same pile that he made as a more intelligent human to lead his zombie brethren out to, you know, create more chaos. So they're just good little one-offs with O. Henry endings.
Yeah, that was a good ending. I thought he would just let her go and sacrifice himself.
Well, yeah, because he was still sentient at the moment that, like, he realizes he, you know, is bit, but he starts relating to his role, I guess, and his fate. I looked on their website, and they've got 5 issues of Killer Toons comics that I don't know if they're large, and these are just, like, individual stories from each of them, or if, I don't know what the scoop is, but they're very good. I don't know if they're Spanish from the website. I'm going to explore more, though. Killer Toons comics.
Yeah, sounds like up my alley.
Yeah, they were great. Got any more, Phil?
Well, I'll save for next time, but I did read IDW's reprint of Duck Avenger #1, which was 72 pages. It was originally an Italian one, I believe. Yeah. So, yeah, so it was Italy that originally did these. I guess I missed an issue zero, though, because they refer to that issue a lot. But it sounded kind of boring anyway. But basically, this wasn't... It didn't really grab me. I bought the first two issues. I don't think I'll get any more. But basically, he's a superhero with no powers. He doesn't really do anything that heroic. But this first issue is just him going around trying to stop this guy that can time travel and do crimes that way. You get introduced to his supporting cast, which is basically like a newspaper place. So it's like it's just like Spider-Man. You have the asshole boss, you know, and a reporter and stuff. And but yeah, overall, I didn't really like it. I only really picked this up because of the other one I'm excited to read, which has four parts out so far I have, and there's one more left of Donald Quest, I think it's called.
Huh.
Because that one doesn't have the traditional look. Like it looks really neat the way they did it.
I just bought a soft cover collection of a Disney tale that's, again, a Spanish or European from, and it's, I think it's the first time it's been translated to the States, or it's from like 50 years ago or something, and it's Mickey's Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I think Goofy is Virgil and and Mickey is Dante, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with the sensibilities that were allowed back then, which I'm sure were, you know, fairly liberal.
And I like the stories where they're a little bit different. One thing I did like about this, though, is Uncle Scrooge had an appearance, and whenever he shows up, I always seem to like it more. But I don't know if he's going to be a reoccurring character or not.
Kevin, got a last one?
I'm fascinated by this one comic here. It's even more photocopy paper ish.
You're a paper.
It's two pieces
snob.
Of paper. It's literally two pieces of paper that could come out of your printer. But it's a 2-4-7 page story with a cover. Just folded in half. And it goes on to the back page. But it's basically a murder mystery by Kevin Cannon, the Horsehead Killer, where someone with a, funny enough, is killing people and they've been wearing a horse head. If it wasn't obvious from the title.
Horsehead bookends! Horsehead bookends!
So this guy's basically going to his new job, and the boss is assigning tasks to all these people. And then, like, the new guy, he's like, yeah, you're going to be figuring out who's been murdering everyone here. So he's just like, what? And then the guy laughs and says, don't worry, it's not an actual horse head. And the guy's like, yeah, he's not exactly feeling like that. That's supposed to be comforting. Like, boss keeps on saying, no, it's all right. It's not as bad as you think. I have this other detail. And then the new guy's like, is this for real? Is this really happening? But he does go about his search for the killer, and stuff gets resolved. Horribly, in one scene where the Horsehead Killer shows up and people are basically body parts are all chopped up and things are all over the place. But this is in black and white and rather cartoonish, so it's it doesn't seem quite as traumatic as I might be making a sound.
Is animal parts mixed with human parts a new fetish of yours?
It's not animal parts. Like the boss said, it's not an actual horse head.
Yeah, right.
Phil.
Are we learning more about Kevin?
Oh, I exhausted all my regular material for last episode.
You haven't talked about Valiant for a long time. I'm very proud of you.
You want me to talk about Valiant? Is that what you're getting at?
Your time's over. It's the end of the episode.
So I do have a question for you, Phil, though. Are you going to be picking up that Jughead one-shot that's a horror book that's coming out in the spring?
I never saw that in previews.
Yeah. It's not the same writer, but it's...
Well, I don't care, because that writer's a fucking lazy asshole.
Yeah, he only has a TV show to do.
Oh, wow, a great TV show. He's such a rock star. Wasn't his other TV show Glee? This guy's really banging them out of the park. Get to the good stuff. Do the horror line. But yeah, obviously I'll pick it up, but I'll probably bitch about it. It's only a one shot, so that's good.
Yeah, I think it's like 48 pages or something. I think was it Frank Thierry and maybe Michael Walsh, I think, were the guys involved. There might have been another artist too.
Yeah, good. So maybe they'll do they can take over the series or at least do a storyline while they, you know, do nothing.
Yeah, I thought it was funny.
They left all that on the table. Like, I know there's some delays, but it's like they've really just given up or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For the last 2 years, it's felt like they've given up.
Yeah, they got, like, what, maybe two issues out in a year? That's what I was wondering, because
and
I'm like...
Two issues of Sabrina and two issues of the Archie. That's it.
So I was wondering how long it would be until they, like, got someone else to do something else.
But Sabrina's a different team, so I don't know why that one is so late all the time.
Well, wasn't that some of that supposed to be funded by the Kickstarter, possibly?
Oh.
I'm not sure.
I think that's a quality book, that Sabrina one. Oh, yeah.
Are you being serious, Phil? I couldn't tell.
No, very. That Sabrina one was very, like, high quality for me. I really enjoy it.
Well, they have another Sabrina one-shot coming out, but I think that's, like, regular Sabrina, not horror Sabrina, so.
Yeah.
Any last ones, Andrew?
Do you guys like westerns?
Love westerns.
Boom! Did you pick up the new Boom, Death Be Damned?
No.
I was hoping you were going to say Copperhead. Does that come out soon?
It's Ben Acker and Ben Blacker. They were the...
But I didn't know.
Yeah, they were the... I can't remember the show they did, but it was a live show and a podcast and toured all over, and then they did the comic book version. They also added Andrew Miller writing, and then Hannah Christensen with colors, Juan Usich, lettered by Colin Bell. And the first issue, 1 of 4, so limited series. And the setup's pretty simple. It starts with a woman whose family was killed by these bad guys, so she's going to go revenge herself on them. Loads up the family horse and takes it into town. And it doesn't go so well. She gets gunned down by the bad guys right away. But the Undertaker is a spiritual man, and he's been trying to raise the dead to find out what happened to his family. And it actually works with this woman. So they have a real trippy double-page sequence where he's getting her back from the other place, they call it. But she doesn't believe that she was dead almost. She just wakes up. And he wants to know from her, like, hey, what do you see? What's over there? How can I find my wife? And he explains how he learned all these different religions and found all these things. And this is the first time it's ever worked. And because she's giving him a lot of grief about it, he shoots her dead. Presumably he's going to resurrect her again. And then that's where the first issue ends. And then there's a postscript where there was a mass hanging. And the different Undertakers collecting the bodies, and one of the zombies out of the back starts waking up as a zombie, not like looking all decomposed and everything, not like the girl looked. And that's where they left off. So, you know, your Western typically has those isolated, lack of support, revenge motifs. These are all common things in the genre. I mean, I'm not a big Western guy, but that's what I've come to understand from it. Sorry, I have a little bit of a cold that I'm still getting over, so that's why I'm so congested.
I thought it was just the desert sand from your Western holdout.
Well, we've had enough rain here to make the...
Or all the smack from the Hollywood lifestyle.
But I would think if you like, you know, this has, like I said, all the standard Western tropes. But I also understand people that are like, you know what, 4-issue limited series, I'm waiting for the trade.
Yeah, that's what I usually do, yeah.
But Boom has always have, I think they've had a lot of stuff that goes right to movie, so I don't know if this has another life plan somewhere else or not.
I used to be a huge Boom and IDW fan, but I find they're just not the same these days. They're kind of like a Dynamite now. Whoa. Like just all licenses and like good quality stuff still, but they do a lot of licensed stuff. It's really taken over.
I like IDW's art books and collections and those kinds of things.
Yeah, they do a lot of those.
Their collections are some of them are unparalleled. Mm-hmm. They do the artist editions and stuff too, you know. But as far as their floppies, yeah, agreed.
Yeah, they used to have awesome minis, like all kind of different stuff.
I just got a hardcover art book oversized from them that, I mean, it's got the nice spot varnishing on the covers and stuff, and it's just a great collection. It is Dave Stevens' complete sketches and studies. And there were 4 San Diego Comic-Con sketchbooks that Dave Stevens put out from 2002 to 2006, and he passed away in 2008. And, you know, I've seen them around over the years to be able to pick up, but not any one of them was that great to me that justified the cost. But here in this collection, it's oversized, and it's got not only all of those 4 sketchbooks, but over 100 additional sketches. There's no text except for in the very back when they try to say like where some of the stuff came from and whatnot. So it's just all of his. I mean, there's stuff that's fully rendered. There's stuff that's fully colored. There's stuff that's partial. There's raw, really just breakdown sketchy things. There's light studies. You know, his Frazetta-y type art. It's awesome. It's got Rocketeer in it, of course. The science fiction girls. Lots of that pug dog of his. The Shadow, Vampirella, some Marvel and DC characters. There's a few fully rendered, like, celebrity portraits, like Marilyn Monroe and Elvira, Faye Ray, Nosferatu, Lindsay Wagner, and Linda Carter as Wonder Woman. And, of course, lots of Betty Page all throughout. But, really, this is the collection I was waiting for. Real nice. I've got I must have 5 or 6 real nice Dave Stevens hardcovers on the shelf, and this belongs right there next to him.
Yeah, IDW really cranks out those. I've got the Sienkiewicz New Mutants. I got that Ditko one I still got to get into. Plus, I haven't gotten the last Kirby Fantastic Four, and they just announced the new ones, which is going to be on Twice Up, you know, the Silver Age pages. So yeah, they.
Which one's got?
They make my the next Kirby Fantastic Four one has a lot of the Twice Up pages.
This is going to be another Fantastic Four. Cool.
Yeah. So I'm like, because I've got the Thor one. Those things are great, but they're huge.
Yeah.
But yeah, IDW makes me sad in the pocketbook.
But it hurts so good.
Yeah, they want me to be poor and live in a house made of art books.
All right, let's make that another episode. You can find us on Twitter, on Facebook. You can listen to us on Marvel Noise. You can visit our sponsor, Nobody.
Well, it's important to visit them. They get lonely.
And you can come back next time where we'll be shooting off some noise about whatever indie comic books we were caught up with at that time. Sound good?
Maybe it'll be another casual episode. Who knows?
Later.
Well, I love the Lone Ranger. I love that Dennis Law. Him and George Best. He sure knew how to kick a ball. I wanted to be a cowboy and learn to crack a whip. Stand up in that lonely street to 6 guns on my hip. Along the mighty Beatles came. And everyone went, ah! They could play and sing and everything. And of course that John could draw. Well, that was it for me. I never once looked back. And tricks to learn and waves to catch. I had a plan of attack.
Are you looking at me?
Are you looking at me? Me, pal. Then we headed south with a song. crashing in. From black and white to color, from innocence to sin. It was summer in December, blowing heat waves in my mind. People talking funny, some cruel and some were kind. From the crackle of the cane to the frown of a big black snake, from the breakers at Bondi and down to Wallaga Lake, from the sound of a million fly screen doors closing on the past, like that chimney the fires couldn't burn, I was built to last. Are you looking at me? Are you looking at me? Are you looking at me? Are you looking at me, pal? When I flew across the ocean, I was number one. People gave me everything, and I didn't need a gun. Walking down that avenue, I never felt so alive. People calling out my name, and I'd only just arrived. There was a tightrope walking bagpiper in the middle of Central Park. Steam was rising from the ground. I wore my cape out after dark. I had myself a moment, my day out in the sun. It's an unfinished story, but it's more than just begun. And I know more than one thing, but not more than two or three. And I'll tell you if you'll listen, and I'll tell you for free. It's no life being a cowboy and eating all them beans. Coffee's cold and the herd is gone, and all you've got's your dreams. You can always put your spurs back on, but save them for Halloween. You're better off heading north, or somewhere you've never been. Are you looking at me? Are you looking at me?